as Hayden was raining them down upon him. "Please stop," I begged, tears intermingling with blood. I was attempting to stand and drag breath in at the same time. My hand was outstretched as I reached for Hayden's back. I could see Tallow's face. Fear was etched deeply on it. He was desperately clinging to a life that was being hammered out of him. Hayden was relentless in his pursuit. "At least your girlfriend stood and faced me. You run like a rabbit!" The taunting was met with a chorus of cheers from Hayden's men. Standing tall or running away, Tallow had no chance. "Fight me!" I stood with a grunt, my breath still coming in too shallow to sate my lungs. "The ghost is back. Whatever shall I do?" Hayden was playing it up. If nothing else, I'd bought Tallow a short respite. Hayden's arms were outstretched as he spun. Tallow lunged. "No!" I screamed. Hayden had been waiting for just that response. He spun with a savage fury, dropping to one knee as he thrust his sword up under the edge of Tallow's exposed ribcage. Tallow went down on both knees, grunting as he did so. First he looked to Hayden, and then over to me. His eyes were wide in pain as he wrapped his hands around a gash in his side. He dropped his sword to the ground and dropped to his knees. When he looked over to me, his features softened. "I love you, Winter. I always have." I ran toward him. Hayden was wiping his blade across his sleeve as though he'd just slaughtered a beast for supper. "No!" I skidded down to his body, lowered it slowly, and cradled his head in my lap. "Why Menot wants you so badly is beyond me. Women have no place in war," Hayden jeered. I gently placed Tallow's head on the ground and stood. "I am going to make this as painful as possible," I told him. "You cannot possibly match me. Have you not learned your lesson yet?" "Oh, I learned. Are you going to keep spewing your conceited garbage or fight me?" Hayden's men oohed at the slight I delivered him. "I will hurt you for that." "You will never hurt anyone again." The tears I held in solidified. I would hold on to them until that traitor paid for all that I had lost. I let the anger burn, deliberately clouding my judgment for as long as I could. I did not want to detach myself and slip into time dilation. Hayden squared off with me. Warily, I did the same. His sword arm flexed once again, and I feigned, bringing my sword up. He again swung out with his left arm. I was able to duck under it. I was too close to his body to get him with my sword. Instead, I brought my left elbow in on his jaw as I stood. I heard the satisfying crunch of at least one tooth shattering as his mouth was driven shut. As he staggered back, I thought to press the attack until his sword came up between us. I danced back quickly, just out of reach of the razor-sharp tip. He spat out a wad of blood mixed with bone fragments, then dragged his sleeve across his lip, leaving a trail of red. "You're going to pay for that." His words were laced with venom. "Careful, Hayden," Menot warned again. "I want her relatively undamaged." "Oh, look, I think your master is concerned for my safety," I taunted. "You'll notice he doesn't overly care what happens to you." Hayden's grip on his emotions was tenuous. I was trying to push him over the edge in the hopes he would do something stupid. "What a strong warrior you are. You killed your enemy with sedition and then defeated my boyfriend, a mighty Distancian. You must feel so powerful." "You will stop," he growled. "Make me. Or are you so concerned with giving Menot his prize intact?" "I know what you're doing, Winter. I will not allow it to happen." "Oh, it already has. Look at your men's eyes. How long will they want someone who bows to another to rule them?" "Menot does not rule here." Menot was laughing, the sound echoing in his metal chamber. "Had I known I was going to get this much entertainment, I would have packed a bigger lunch." "He's laughing at you. How long before your men do the same?" The words were not out of my mouth before his charge began. I will kill you. His sword narrowly missed my waist. He would have cut me open like a fish had he hit true. Again, he was too close before I could bring my sword to bear. I pushed him away, sending him stumbling into one of his men. He pushed back, sending the man to the ground. Laughter resonated around us. I did not think that he could get any angrier than he had been. I was wrong. Veins bulged out on his neck, crawling up past his chest plate like fat worms. He came at me, his sword already on a downward arc. He was going to attempt the same tactic on me that he had used on Tallow, to just beat me into submission. I deflected the first three or four blows. The next strike I pushed off to the side, leaving him off balance and exposed for a fraction of a second. It was so short, it was nearly imperceptible. It was not enough time to get in a killing blow, but the slice I delivered across his chest would sting and bleed. He would not soon forget who had given him that injury. He howled like a wounded animal. I did not think I would have another chance to strike before I might be killed. I would not allow what happened to Tallow to go without justice. I pulled my revolver free and was about to shoot Hayden. He looked past my shoulder and nodded. The next thing I felt was blinding pain against the side of my head and the merciless pull of gravity as I was falling to the ground. The world was fading to black. Harm her and die. It might have been Menot speaking, but I didn't care. Where I was going would be a reprieve from thinking about Tallow, Cedar, my mother, and all I had given up. I love you too, I whispered. And then there was no more. Chapter 22 Escape. When I woke, Cedar was kneeling beside me with a wet cloth. My vision was blurred, but I could make out several Distancians sitting around a fire, bringing in wood, stacking rocks, and other small duties. "She's awake!" she called across the small campsite. Serot came out of the firelight and sat upon his haunches next to me. "How fare you, ghost?" he asked. What happened? How did I come to be here?" I asked slowly, unsure of my own state of mind. "Slow," Cedar said, placing a hand on my chest, not allowing me a chance to arise, although I wasn't sure if I could. "You suffered a pretty bad crack on the head, enough that Hayden had to immediately bring you to his medis and not just hand you over to Menot." I must have had a confused expression on my face because she clarified that Serot had told her everything in regards to the betrayal. "I went back for you, Winter, like I said I would. I couldn't leave you behind. I thought it was all going to be for nothing when I came out of that water and Serot was at the edge of the pool." Serot was smiling. I had a feeling. He was beaming. "I told her that you and Tallow were laid up in sickbay." "Tallow?" I choked. Tears had formed and begun to wet my cheeks. "Yes, he has survived. It will be a while until he's healthy. Right now he rests," Cedar said. "And you're with us now?" I asked of Serot. "Some of my people turned against Hayden when they realized he had become Menot's errand boy," he said. "We are not many. But we stand with you," he said proudly. "He won't rest until he finds us," I said. "Well, it won't be from the cistern," Cedar answered. "We have completely blocked up the hole with rock and debris from the walls of the building by using something called a hand grenade." "We've done it, then," I said, closing my eyes. "Our quest to free distance, to free us all, has finally begun." Epilogue. Reichel Journal Excerpts. My name is Reichel Talbot. I keep journals. It is the legacy of my family name to record all our deeds and actions in this way. I can trace our journals all the way back to the man that began it, Michael Talbot. If even half of what the man wrote down is true, Then he is indeed the legend my family believes him to be. I am part of the free men of the East, and have struck out to create my own legacy in this world. These journals have been both a boon and a curse to my family. Every member of my clan I have ever known has sought to outdo each other through these written words. Some are clearly fabricated, like those that tell of wars fought against unnatural beings such as wendigos, werewolves, zombies, and even beings from other worlds, other dimensions, other universes. Yet many seem so real. The endless depravities of man have been recorded in pages just like these. Their cruelty knows no bounds, but neither does their courage. Some of my kin have found great treasures, whether machinery from a bygone era or vast herds of bison that have sustained us through the harsh winters, but most have paid the ultimate price for their own quests, having succumbed to the elements or the sharp bite of steel. Others just have never been heard from again. We Talbots are a driven people. Our tenacity has greatly helped those who survive, although often at the heartbreaking cost of sacrifice. I just turned 17 when I was thumped with the need to strike out on my own, to see more than just the village I was born in, to really see the world, possibly as Michael had. I did not think it would ever be possible to best what he had accomplished. That did not deter me in the least. I could still make my own way. So it was with my mother's tears staining my shirt I left. My father smiled sadly as he waved. My three younger brothers looked on, longingly, as I left, the bug to wander, already worming its way through their bodies. My youngest sister was too small to realize what was happening. Or maybe she did, as she spit up on Sender's chest. My brother did not seem pleased at all. I wouldn't have thought he would mind the spit-up, considering he shies away from washing himself as if soap were caustic. That first night alone was among the hardest I'd ever experienced. As much as I sought some time apart from my family, I had not been ready for the sting of truly being by oneself. Maybe I would have turned around if I could have written more than caught squirrel roasted over open fire. But that's where the curse comes into play. I could not go home. Not yet, anyway. I had to prove something. To whom, though? To a man that was likely little more than a myth and had been in the ground for years beyond counting. What was the sense in that? Still, I would go on. Maybe it is a deficiency in our souls that makes us do so. The first leg of my journey westward had been fairly easy, as there were still many villages on this side of the great river. At one time it had been known as the Mississippi. Now it is just known as the Sludge. Traveling was uncommon, but most towns I visited had an inn, mostly to surveil, but also shelter for the occasional explorer or trader. I generally kept to myself, seeking nothing more than a warm meal and a decent place to lay my head. I wanted nothing to do with the painted ladies that promised all sorts of delights for some coin. The closest I got to anything worthy of writing in my journal was when a drunkard threatened to cut me with a chair unless I gave him my money. I'd laughed uncontrollably until he'd swung it and nearly took my head off. Luckily, he'd lost his balance and fell over, fast asleep at that. It was nearly the end of my third week away from home when I stood on the shores of the Sludge. Most Talbots who wandered had made it this far, and I felt a deep sense of pride that I had joined their ranks. But it was the ones that went beyond that were remembered for their deeds, or met with infamous disaster. This waterway was the border between safety and adventure. I don't know what was so magical about it. I knew from my history books that this had long ago been a major thoroughfare for trade and commerce, and then during the wars it had nearly solidified from the detritus of destruction that had flowed down and through it, hence the renaming of it to the Sludge. It was still a great river, as far as those went, even if it was only half the width of what it had originally been. What it lacked in breadth, it made up for in swiftness. To jump into this water now would potentially whisk you away at speeds faster than a person could run. It took another week, and all the nerve I could muster, to find a place to cross. Getting across entailed hiring the services of a man who could have easily been friends with Moses. He had a cable stretched tight, spanning the river. It was attached to a heavy pole on one side and rusted out remains of something I could not discern on our side. "Don't touch that!" he yelled at me, when in my desire to learn what our anchor was, I absently ran my hand across the material. A chunk of it as large as my thigh fell to the ground. He started cackling wildly. He had a flotation device, but no matter how hard I tried, I could not in good conscience call the two lashed-together barrels a boat. The boat was attached to the cable with a rope that went from each corner to a ring on the cable. "I think my name is John." The old man raised his leg. I think he wanted me to shake it. And maybe I would have if his shoeless foot hadn't been as black as a moonless night in winter. As it was, I just looked at him in horror until he seemed to forget what he was doing. "Wait, maybe it's Trip. I think once I was known as Paunch, although that may have been someone else." I was half a heartbeat from leaving this madman by himself. I don't think he would have noticed my absence. Suddenly, his gaze fixed on me with a clarity I'm not even sure he understood. "You look familiar. You have a father?"
I think everyone has a father, don't they?
How does one respond to that question?
"You have things to do and people to find, just like he did. I can see it all over your face."
"What are you talking about, Ancient One?"
"He borrowed my wife's shoes once. Now, get on my yacht and let's get going."
He latched onto my arm with a strength I wouldn't have thought possible from a man half his age. He left little to doubt that I was getting on. When we reached the other side, he seemed to have forgotten I was even on board, or what he was doing on the far side of the river. He scratched his head and looked back the way we had come. He jumped when I spoke. "How much do I owe you?"
"For what?"
"For safe passage across the river. What do I owe you?" That clarity once again washed away the days of age the man was under.
"Consider it repayment for a debt I will never be able to truly recompense."
"You make no sense. You owe me nothing."
"Perhaps not you. Maybe not your father. But somewhere down that path of ancestors, I definitely owe. Good luck, Michael."
I had hopped off and taken two steps to turn. John, or whoever he was, had already traveled yards away, pulling himself quickly back to the other side. "Wait! I never told you my name," I shouted. He turned, smiled, and waved.
"Ever been in a helicopter?" he called out.
Then he went back to pulling himself across. That is most definitely going in the journal, although I don't think anyone is going to believe it. I was just shaking my head as the man diminished in the distance. West of the river was nearly devoid of humanity. Most villages I encountered were barely settlements and wanted nothing to do with a traveler. People here were different, mistrustful, more guarded. There had been no open hostility towards me, but that was only because I promised to keep moving. I'd had to trade an extra shirt for a loaf of bread at a place called Nedford. They used nothing that resembled currency there. Ever west I traveled. If not for my journal, I would have lost count of the days. The flat wasteland of the plains was home to no one save the furtive creatures of the desert. It was hard to imagine that at the far side of this land I would encounter an ocean so vast it could not be crossed. Dust threatened to choke my lungs. I had to tie fabric across my face. I mostly sustained myself on dried beef and cactus water. As the days drifted on, I forgot the reason I'd had for putting myself through this hardship. To what end? This was not an adventure. This was a struggle for survival. Still, I plodded on, ever forward. At first I thought it was a trick of the clouds or my eyes, but the farther I traveled, the more real it became. A range of mountains rose in the distance, the height and breadth of which I'd never seen in the east. Those I thought were peaks were gentle bumps in the landscape compared to what lay ahead of me. Then animals, great herds, passed by on the landscape, hundreds of them. Bison, most likely. They were far off, and I could not get to them before the night. Tomorrow, though, I was going to eat fresh meat. I strung my bow, stoked a fire, and lay down to get some rest. Tomorrow's journey would change everything I had ever known in my entire life. At sunrise, the herd had moved to graze farther west. From my vantage point, it appeared that they were at the base of a line of foothills. Where that meat on the hoof went, I was going to follow. My mouth was salivating at the prospect of what I could be roasting over an open fire tonight. Hopefully it would curb the debilitating homesickness that had been creeping up on me these last few weeks. The large animals seemed to be on their own journey. They just kept moving. It was rapidly approaching midday, and I'd only halved the distance between us. It had been my desire to already be dressing out an animal by now. I'd gone up one side of a small mound and down the other before I was finally within range of the magnificent beasts. I drew my bow and loosed my arrow. I had been aiming at a smaller one, knowing full well that I could neither eat nor carry the meat from a larger animal. I did not want to waste such bounty. I had been so fixated on the younger bison, I had not noticed the large male at all, at least until he crossed the flight path of my arrow. The razor-sharp tip hit and passed through the heavy mass of muscle on his back. He never paused as he cried out in warning. The entire herd took flight. "Damn it," I muttered. I was bone-weary from my pursuit, and now it appeared as if I was going to have to go even farther for my meal. It was then I saw the tall, thin towers from a mile away. I figured them to be just another remnant from the old ways when man's influence on the world had been much greater than it was now. I didn't think much about them, at least until I got closer. The bison had passed through them in a southwesterly direction, and I was about to follow until I saw her. At first, I figured her for a mirage and nearly laughed at my maddened state. I hadn't seen another human being in a month, if my journal was correct, and I'd certainly never seen anyone as beautiful as her, ever. She was in a large green field, dotted with bright white and yellow flowers, her long, pale hair caught in the breeze and was swirling around her head. She'd been watching the buffalo pass her by, no more than 300 or so yards away, and then her gaze had shifted to me as I came into view. I was staring at her, my mouth agape. She turned to look behind her. I thought she was going to flee, but she held her ground as I came closer. Each step I took redefined the depth of her beauty, and even then I questioned whether she was human or of another world. High cheekbones framed a narrow face, her straight nose tilted just slightly up above a full set of lips and delicately pointed and cleft chin. She was tall and slender. Her stance spoke of natural grace and agility. I thought again perhaps she was ethereal. After all, Michael had written about beings too beautiful to be of this world. Maybe he hadn't been falsifying that after all. "Stop!" she cried, holding her hand up. It wasn't the cry of the fearful, at least not for herself. She seemed to be concerned for me, as if somehow my life were in danger. I looked around, thinking maybe I was on the verge of a precipice I had missed while I had been so focused on her. There was nothing, so I moved forward. Her face went from alarm to confusion, then relaxed as I came closer. She looked to the towers bordering my right and left, then held my gaze with her beautiful eyes as I approached. My hunger, my pain, my weariness, my desire to be home, all of it was burned away as I looked upon a vision I did not deem myself worthy to see. "My name is Hope," she told me. This has been Distance, Winter's Rising, Volume 1. Written by Mark Tufo. Narrated by Sean Renette. Copyright 2014 by Mark Tufo. Production copyright 2018 by Mark Tufo.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.